we are asking if it's really possible to retrain the nervous system to create a more successful life.
They caught us, started flicking nuts, getting chains out and stuff, but the damage were done. So now on top of all that anger, I had PTSD.
Dads, hey, welcome to the latest episode of the Dadversity podcast. And today we are asking if it's really possible to retrain the nervous system to create a more successful life. So we are going to find out. We are joined by Tim Neal. Tim, how are you?
Hi, man. I'm really good, thanks. Hi, Dads. Nice to see you all.
Great to have you as well. I'm excited for this episode because it got my attention, actually, by your own admission and the conversation we have and the content you put on online. You spent decades feeling depressed, hopeless, and stuck. And I pointed towards your podcast page to get the inspiration for this. But now you're it's not unfair to say, or an overreaction to say, one of the world leading emotional coaches, helping over 800 people alongside your business partner to unblock trauma, release inner passion, and improve self-esteem, and all these great things that you do it. And even down to our first call, when you spoke about the ability to unblock previous traumas, to go and dominate in front of speaking, in front of an audience, and tapping into where all this inner energy is. And I was really intrigued to what kind of sits behind all this. But firstly, and the nature of this is to understand where this journey started for you. You used to be a DJ, right? And so when we first had the conversation, we spoke about the previous confidence that you had as a DJ versus the confidence that you had in day-to-day life when you were a DJ before you started doing all this, the emotional coaching side. You were obviously thousands of people and supreme confidence. And tell me if I'm wrong here, Tim, but I'm going to assume that industry was full of probably drugs and drinks and late nights and all these
high. And I was full of drugs and drink and late nights as well.
So that probably helped the confidence. And then you go to this.
That was all that helped the confidence. That's where it came from.
Yeah. So how does a guy who used to exist in this state of kind of faux high, led by all these narcotics, and suddenly finding a happiness and throw away all the trauma that's been following him around for years? And so that's what I wanted to dive into first, Tim.
Yeah, cool.
Where did it all begin for you? Because you were never, you, from our previous chat, you didn't always have this inner confidence to go and teach people the right way to go.
No, not at all. So I'll do the short version. I was a really happy kid. Into everything, loved people. I used to get the stranger danger chat all the time, so I'd talk to anybody. I just didn't have a care in the world. Then I went to school, and me and school were like oil and water. My favorite question was why, because they kept telling me to do stuff and I'd be like, why? And I won't get an answer. I remember going to school when I was about six, holding my mum's hand, walking to there, and I remember looking up at her and going, why do I have to go here? And she went, because they teach you things. And I went, but they're not teaching me anything. They just keep telling me to shut up.
It wasn't love, was it? It was just hate.
No, there was no love there. But the thing is, I was excited to go to school because I thought they were going to teach me stuff. So I was actually disappointed when I got there.
Yeah.
And anyway, I got this teacher when I was seven who wasn't going to put up with any of this off me and started to bully me a little bit and just be making an example of me in front of the other kids. And they worked this out. So they used to wind him up, and then he went out of a lesson one day. This kid drew on his t-shirt. He came back and he went, who did that? And he goes, Tim. So I'm like, so he picked me up, dragged me out across the table, took me outside. I'm seven-year-old, slammed me on the floor and said, sit there till the next naughty little kid comes out. So I'm like, fuck this. I'm going home. So I lived on the estate next door to the school. So I ran home and told my mum, but I'd been playing up. Because I didn't like school, so they thought I were playing up. So she goes, wait for your dad to come back. So I thought, oh yeah, dad will tell him. And then my dad come home, and then they just shouted at me and dragged me into school and sided with the teacher. Mm. Now, I now know from the work I do, we're very vulnerable when we're that age, and we're very egocentrical. The whole world revolves around us, but we rely completely on primary caregivers. So my primary caregivers had now sided with my enemy, and then he was calling me a liar, so they started asking me why I was lying, and then all my relatives started asking me why I was lying, then my neighbors, because we lived on a big council estate, so we knew everybody, like they were family, everybody was asking me why I was lying. So I went mute. I went mute for 6 weeks. All I can remember about it is laying on my bed, kicking out at people. And it just, I started having nightmares. I had waking nightmares, sleeping nightmares. I had echoing voices in my head. I was having vivid dreams, and I was just horrible. And so I'd gone from this happy kid to just angry and dark and seething all the time. So long story short, that ended up with me being a very aggressive kid growing up, fighting all the time, in trouble all the time at school. As a teenager, ended up in trouble all the time. And then me and my mates were walking uptown when I was about 16 with our aggressive nature. Some kid shouts, "Greebo," because we were rockers. One of my mates turns around and goes, "Oof," like, and next thing you know, we're getting chased by a massive gang of blokes. They caught us, started flicking nuts, getting chains out and stuff, and then just went, "Oh, leave them, they're only kids." But the damage was done. So now on top of all that anger, I had PTSD.
From that moment?
I didn't go out for weeks. I never really went uptown on my own again. Really messed with me. I don't think, and everybody else just, "It's all right, we got away with that." I think on top of my trauma as a kid, stacked that trauma on top of that one, it just pressed something deep in me that just messed me up big time. So that's where that was rock bottom, I think.
Do you think people who are suffering from trauma, you use the example there of your mates who were just like, "Oh, we got away with that, brilliant."
Yeah.
Do you think they ever actually processed it or dealt with it? Or do you think people have just got this tendency to just brush it under the carpet and go, "Doesn't really matter for now"? And it keeps coming back and it hits them at different stages.
It depends. I couldn't tell you because I'm not them. What I do know about people is every single one of us perceives threat differently based on our experience, based on our level of trauma, based on our level of stress, based on what we've dealt with up till now. Before that, I was a cocky little shit. Right? And I thought I was the hardest kid in the world. I didn't give a shit. I used to mouth off all the time and everything. So to me, it didn't appear dangerous really until that happened. And it was a real threat right in front of me. I honestly thought they were going to kill us. Do you know what I mean? There was about five times as many of them, and they were about 2 or 3 years older. And at 16, they were a lot bigger than us. You know what I mean? And I was like, "We're going to die." I really thought we were. Whereas my mate, he was just like laughing about it 10 minutes later. I can't even remember what happened afterwards. Blanked out for a few days. It just overwhelmed my nervous system completely. So it's very personal, and it's very, I use the word perceive, right? Because none of us, there is no reality out there. It's just our perception of it. And we create our own version of it. Now, to me, for whatever reason, that just went way over the top of what I could deal with. When the way I'll speak about it in a minute, the way I classify trauma is just, and it's the effect that has inside of your body when you can't deal with whatever you're trying to deal with, when it's just too much to deal with. Trauma is the effect that has in your body when that happens. So it can be a big thing, or it can be loads of little things add up. So I would guess I was pretty traumatized already.
Despite prior to that incident?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I'm a typical man from the north. We grow up, not just the north, a typical man, like, boys don't cry, don't show your emotions, keep it all inside, put a strong act. Like on my estate, if you showed weakness, you got beaten up. So you were always like, you wouldn't smile too much, and you were always a bit hard and walking a bit, playing that game. So I wouldn't have shown it. And I actually shared with one of my best friends the other day what I was up to at the moment. And he went, "Oh, but you've never had any problems, have you?" That's what he thought, because I never showed it to anybody ever.
Yeah.
Because the shame around that. I should be a tough lad. I should be able to deal with this. Why am I scared going uptown? And I couldn't tell any of my mates that, because they'd have thought I were weak, you know? So then that compounds the problem, because now you're not sharing it and you're holding it all inside. So not long after that, I started going out. And then I found when I drank, that feeling disappeared. So it doesn't take many experiences like that before you condition it.
Yeah.
And when I say condition, all conditioning is when the habit system in your brain sees something's happening over and over again. So it just automates for you. So it saves energy of having to consciously. It becomes an unconscious pattern. So unconsciously, I discovered when I drank, all of a sudden, I wasn't scared. I could talk to girls. I could do all these things. It used to freak me out a little bit. So then I started drinking, not heavily, often.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered weed, and weed had a similar effect. So that's why I started smoking weed. Then I started clubbing. Then that got really interesting because I wasn't very good at drinking, to be honest. I'm a bit of a lightweight. And weed makes you a bit shut and quiet. Then I discovered clubbing drugs.
Yeah.
And that was a whole different world because they just open you up.
Mm.
And actually, when you say, how come somebody who was like that could suddenly do it? Because they just take all of that inhibition and all of that fear and anxiety, and they just calm your nervous system.
How did you feel?
Powerful.
Mm.
Powerful and free. My girlfriend once went, she goes, when you walk into a club, you change. I went, that's because I'm king of clubs. And that's how I felt. And not in an egotistical way, just because I would never like that. Because I was always so careful because to me, this was just like someone had handed me the golden ticket. All of a sudden, I was free. I wasn't going to abuse it. I was like very respectful of it, if you like.
Mm.
So I was just like, but I felt so strong and powerful. But then that was a double-edged sword because within a month, I'd got a job dancing at the Lead Mill in Sheffield, a night called Rise, which was the North's premier night. And the dancing job was the second best job you could have in there. The DJs were the best. So within a month, I was dancing on that stage and like getting to know everybody in the club and whatever. Within another 6 months, I was playing.
Yeah.
So now I'm witnessing myself doing these amazing things. And by the way, my dream from 7 years old was to be a DJ. So I'm like living my dream. The reason I moved to Sheffield was to follow. So now I'm living my dream. I'm like, all the people I used to look up to are now my mates. And it's just like, she's mental. So I'd go from that to Monday morning. I was running a software team at the time. I was a software engineer in normal life. And I had a team of five people. And those five people were five of my closest mates. I spent all day, every day with them, right? But I had to do a meeting at night. And even in that meeting with them five people I knew better than anyone, I was terrified.
So you'd go and train thousands of people.
Yeah.
You'd come back into the office the next morning and struggle to get in front of five people.
So I had that. I always call it, like, my DJ name was Tim Tom. And I'm Tim, so it was like Tim Tom versus Tim.
Yeah.
So Tim Tom could do anything, like, no worries. My only answer was, yeah, when?
Yeah.
Like, I had no fear.
Yeah.
And as socially, I was just like, I remember going to a party, and it was really embarrassing. This girl took me in there, and she walked me into this room full of people I've never met, and she went, oh God, guess who this is? This is Tim Tom. And I was like, and like everyone looked at me like, no man. I walked back out of the room with her. I went, wait there. So I opened the door and went back in the room and went, hi everyone. Sorry about that. My name's Tim. Lovely to meet you all. And just went around and shook everyone's hand and like ended up having the best night. Like I just, nothing fazed me. Nothing bothered me. It was just effortless. Then Monday, I couldn't look you in the face. I didn't like shaking hands. I didn't like physical touch with people. Yeah, in the club, I was hugging everybody. And it was like, but I was so grateful because it showed me what I could.
When did you
realize there was a problem? Sorry?
When did you realize there was a problem?
My other rock bottom, which was when I came round at a party and I was chatting away. And having a great time laughing and joking and everything. And I started coming around and realized I was sat on my own and everyone had left.
Oh.
So you just thought, I was sat chatting with people and there were no one there. And then I was like, oh dear, that's not good.
I remember that moment quite vividly.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you do? And when you realized?
I laughed at myself, to be honest, because I was absolutely off my tits. But when I came around the next day, I was like, not good. And I wrote a page in my journal. I've got it. We've just moved. My journals are all like packed up. I'll try and find it. But I wrote a note on the journal about how low I felt and how this can't continue.
Really?
And then the universe threw me something, which was my dad had a stroke. And I lived 90 miles from them. So every weekend I had to drive home. I chose to drive home and help my mum look after him.
Yeah.
And I had to knock it on the head and it saved me, I think.
So the
trap. It had got abuse. It wasn't partying anymore. It got to abusive stage. It was just, I needed to get out. So I think that really helped me. So then what I did is I then turned my 180 mile round trip every weekend into university on wheels. And I started listening to, I started off with Tony Robbins. Someone gave me a Tony Robbins CD and said, have a listen to this. And I started listening to that. And then I heard him interviewing people. So then I'd get, because this is before the internet or anything like that. So I'd like, or it was very in its early years. So I'd go and order a CD course of somebody he'd interviewed or something. Can I do that? And I just did course after course. I read over 100 books, dozens of courses, went on loads of event programs, trained as a hypnotherapist, trained in NLP, trained as a life coach, trained as all these things, but couldn't do them. Because I was still scared. I still had that terror in me that just, I would get so far and then something would happen and I'd freak out. Yeah. And I'd come crashing back down again. And it was almost like there was this invisible force kept pulling me back and stopping me. And what I now know is that invisible force was my nervous system. It didn't feel safe.
What does the, like every good story, right? There's a recovery and a hopefully a good outcome to this. But what does the, we said that, it's not like every story, is it? Because a lot of people probably don't piece it together like you have. In fact, a lot of people probably don't turn the car into the old university on wheels and try to make the recovery. And that's the really sad thing about this, right? Is that there's dads, through the lens of dads, of course, given the nature of the audience, but there are dads out there who are probably in the state you were in Sheffield, drinking,
yeah.
And they never get to recovery stage. And their whole life fall apart because there's nothing else out there for them. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a relationship thing or triggers or whatever it is that's happened earlier in the life, but they don't get to that point. So I guess for you, what was the moment when you started to recover the confidence side to then go and speak to people and almost rewire that nervous system for you? So you've started getting all the knowledge, you become a practitioner, you've learned from the best.
Yeah.
How do you get to that, bridge that gap between the confidence to go and give it to people and give it to the audience that you were trying to get in front of?
Yeah, sure. That journey was 13 and a half years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm £45,000.
Yeah.
Of courses and training and whatever. And I was just about to give up. At the end of it, I did a course called Landmark Forum and I took my sister-in-law on it because they had an open day. So I took her to show her what I'd been learning. She used to get coaches in to help their staff. And she'd had this guy in who blown her mind. So I went around to see my brother and she came up to me and she went, oh my God, I've met this guy. You've got to meet him. She went, I've never seen transformations like it. She said, it's unbelievable. She goes, watch these videos. So I watched a couple of YouTube videos. And I was like, wow. Okay. So long story short, I end up on Tom's course. And the course was called Human Software Engineering, which was not lost on me because I was a software engineer.
The irony.
I was like, the funny transition. Before I was a software engineer, I was a mechanical engineer. So I was an engineer. Then I was a software engineer. And as a human software engineer, it's lined up for me. And anyway, I went on this course and everything I'd done up to there was based on thinking, really. It was all mindset stuff. Even NLP, that's quite, a lot of it's to do with the unconscious mind and stuff, but it's always coming from that side of thinking side of things. So I said to Tom, what's the difference with this? And he goes, this ain't about thinking. This is about feeling. He said, I'm going to introduce you to the feeling system in your body. So I was like, okay. He said, and the first thing we're going to do is get to a quiet mind. I was like, good luck with that. Because I'd tried meditation, or I just could not, my head was just a shed, as they say.
people think
it was just not easy. It was just full of negative thoughts and blah, 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 blah. So anyway, 5 minutes later, I'm sat there with a perfectly quiet mind and I'm like, okay, I'm listening. So then he was like, what I want you to do is pick a traumatic experience. So I didn't need to search far. So I went back to 16 with the lads chasing us and catching us. And there was one bit particularly where they pushed my mate's head up a window. And then I saw one of them flick a knife. And that's what I always used to see that used to freak me out. Like I couldn't go to football. I couldn't watch anything on telly that were violent. If there were violence in films, I'd switch it off. Because it triggered me. So I knew I didn't have to go far. So anyway, he said, what I want you to do is I want you to think about that thing. So I thought about it and he goes, I want you to notice, where do you feel that in your body? And I'd never even thought about that, right? He said that and my throat just closed up.
God.
Now, where do all my problems show up? I've got a burnt out thyroid. It's in your throat. I can't speak. It's in your throat. Everything that I'd ever had was in my throat. And that just, my throat closed to me. And then he taught us the procedure of how to release that and the trauma of that.
Mm.
So it probably took about 10 minutes. So I worked my way through it, and all of a sudden I couldn't feel it anymore. So he said, when you can't feel it anymore, open your eyes. So I opened my eyes. And then he said, what I want you to do now is just close your eyes and go back and think about that thing. So I went back and thought about that and I just started giggling. And it was just a really weird giggle. But now I do it with people. I call it laugh crying because you're laughing and crying at the same time. It's just emotion coming out. So I'm like hysterical. So he comes over and he's like, you all right? And I went, he said, don't worry. Just don't judge it. Just let it come out. Let it come out. It's only emotion. So it's been trapped in there a while, I would imagine. I went, yeah. So he said, it was 27 years actually. So I let it out and then I started to calm down. And then he said, open your eyes. So I opened my eyes and how are you feeling? I went, amazing. Like, light. He said, what happened? So I told him what happened. He goes, tell me about it. So I was like, yeah, me and my mate were just like, I went, he goes, you don't look too bothered now. I was like, I said, I'm not. And he said, what do you notice about it? I said, it's just the story.
Mm-hmm.
So, because what happens is we have this thing that happens, the story. And then what we do is we attach the emotion to it. But to us, it appears as one thing. So when I think about that, this, I feel like this. And it comes lumped in as a thing.
Mm-hmm. Right?
But actually, when you resolve the emotion, it's just a story. And in fact, now it's wisdom, because now not to get yourself into them kind of situations. So it becomes wisdom. Now you recognize those dangers and warnings and all of that, but you haven't got the feeling. So now when I thought about it, you're just like, and as I'm telling you about it, I've got absolutely zero feeling about it. So the rest of the weekend, I let go of the grief of my mum and dad that had passed fairly recently. I nearly went bankrupt. I let go of all the stress around that. I let go of the thing that happened when I was 7. I let go of a teacher shouting at me when I was 6. I let go of all the big things that I could think of. I left that place floating, just absolutely set free.
If you hadn't have met Tim, because your model now is influenced by guy and other practitioners, yeah. Where would you be if you hadn't met this guy?
I was drinking a lot because I was about 40, I think I was 43, 43 when I met him.
Yeah.
And at that time I was drinking a lot. My thyroid were trashed. My adrenal system were trashed. I'd got myself back a little bit because I did have a physical breakdown around that and I couldn't get out of bed for weeks. But I was overweight. I looked terrible. I got black bags under my eyes. So I don't know. I don't know where I ended up. I was smoking again a little bit. I wasn't in a good place.
It's scary, isn't it? Thinking about outcome. Because when you talk of it you know, we know what the answer would have been, right? Probably.
Yeah, and 7 people in my family have died of bowel cancer.
Mm.
Including my mom. I know that I have the genetic makeup, if I put it under the right pressure, to make kind of thing happen. But I also know it's not a given thing. You activate your genes through your way of being, if you like, in a simple terms. And I know that I now do not operate like any of the people who passed from that.
Yeah.
I have no anxiety. I have no depression, nervousness. I don't stress over things. I eat very clean. I don't drink. I don't smoke. As Adam Ant said, what do?
Hell of a turnaround though, Tim, isn't it?
Oh God, if you see what I used to be like compared to what I am. And now I have the confidence and the cheek and everything else that Tim had, but it's sustainable. It's probably 90%. It's not quite as cheeky and quite as out there, but it's enough. And now I don't have these massive ups and downs all the time. I'm like, still go up and down. I'm still human. Every day is not perfect or whatever. It's just a normal up and down now. And even if I'm down, it doesn't last very long.
But dads who are listening to this too, in terms of the unlocking trauma part, what sort of tips would you give them as where to start with this? Because you've been through your journey is mad, really. When you think about the time and the perseverance and the effort to turn it all around.
Yeah.
You've got to look back at some days with just immense pride and real admiration for yourself for doing that. But what if dads are in a similar spot now? They're listening to this. They've got trauma that they know they need to fix. It's ripping relationships apart. They're struggling to cope with the kids. They're pissed off in the relationship or work or whatever. What sort of practical steps can they take today?
Right. Number one, give me a shout, because it's so easy to do, but it's the exact opposite of what you would ever do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's powerful, because what we do when we're emotional stresses, we run away from it.
Yeah.
Right. I'm sure we've all heard of the fight and flight response. The fight and flight response actually has four Fs. It's fight, flight, flee, or fawn.
Mm-hmm.
So fight and flight are obvious, right? But fawn is one of the really insidious ones. So fawning means to people please, to shrink, to withdraw, to it's that kind of energy. Now, that is one of the worst ones that really destroys people's self-esteem and self-worth and everything. But they're trauma responses, right? That is you responding to trauma in your body.
Based on how you know how, based on previous behaviors that you picked up, right?
So that stuff, right? One of the messages I always get across is there's nothing wrong with you, right? There's nothing wrong. You're operating exactly as your body was designed to do. That part of your nervous system, the limbic system, is designed to keep you safe. And this is why I talk a lot about emotional safety, because the primary directive of your nervous system is, number one, to make you survive. And then the second most important thing is to keep you safe. And it will prioritize that over anything, over your happiness, over your hopes and dreams, over your financial status, over anything. None of it matters if you don't survive.
Yeah.
None of it matters if you're not safe. Right. And it's actually a hierarchy. I don't know if you've heard of Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah.
That's what that hierarchy is. That
never studied it. I never really studied it in terms of the different stages, but I've heard
of it. Well, I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't. And do you know what? Me and Tracy used to talk about emotional safety all the time. And then I was reading a marketing book, and the marketing book said, if you want people to buy off you, you have to get them to trust you, because they need to feel safe. So if you don't understand safety, study Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So I was like, oh, I've heard of that. So I went and studied it, and it answered everything that we'd been talking about with emotional safety.
Yeah.
So just to give you a quick run through, there's five levels.
Yeah.
So you've got safety needs, you've got survival, safety, social needs, esteem needs, and self-actualization. So self-actualization just means you being the best version of you can and living your best life and all this stuff people talk about now, chasing your dreams, your goals, and everything. When people get into self-development, where do they start? At the top. Because they go for the dreams, they want to live their best life, they want to do all that stuff. And this is what happened to me. I kept going for that stuff, then I kept crumbling down. Because I haven't fixed the foundations, because those other four layers have to be in strong and foundational for you before you build that amazing life on top of it. So most of us have the safety, most of us have survival sorted. If you've got somewhere to live and you've got food and you're warm and all of that stuff, that's the basic need. But then you get to safety.
Mm.
If you don't feel emotionally safe, right, the next bit's above it. So the social needs, the esteem needs, the self-action, none of that matters.
No.
Because it prioritizes the bottom layers. Right. So this is where we start with people, because if you don't feel safe, then you won't take action.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you walk out on some ice and it starts cracking around you, freeze. You don't want to go, do you? Because it's like, same thing. It's just that mechanism that stops you in your tracks. It's the same mechanism that will stop you taking action, that will stop you asking somebody out on a date, stop you starting a business, stop doing whatever. Exactly the same mechanism.
Is that because there's safety in knowing almost a comfort zone type thing where don't take action, at least the outcome already, broadly what's going to happen.
Yes.
Versus stepping into the unknown when you feel unsafe and your safety needs aren't met. You are literally, you've got no clue what the outcome. So I've got a friend who works in a job that he really despises. And he's done it for 10 years and he hates it. And he's making moves to get out of it. But he hasn't got out of it yet. And he was supposed to come over here, good friend, supposed to come over here a couple of weeks ago to, I was going to give him some support, help him get some new connections and figure out the next step for his career. And he just didn't show, didn't call, whatever. And listening to you now makes me analyze his situation. Because I think actually, it's nothing to do with him not wanting to change. Because he probably really... But his needs at a lower level aren't met foundationally. He's not got the safety, the security he needs to actually make that leap. Is that right?
Exactly that. Mm. Exactly that. And people talk about the comfort zone, right? I don't buy into the comfort zone.
No.
It's anything but comfortable. When you're stuck and you can't take action and you can do it, but you just won't. That, like you say, it's stressful. That's not comfortable.
No.
It's either familiar or it's not... You don't feel safe. It's a lack of safety zone or a safety zone. People are stuck in their safety zones more than comfort zone.
It's hard. I always you say the same to me. It's hard work to be successful, but it's really hard to be stressed, to be frustrated. Oh, really hard, isn't it? Exhausting.
It's horrible. It's horrible. And so then, like I said, there's nothing wrong though. And I really stress that because that part of you is designed to keep you safe. So if you look at it in a different sense, imagine we're at the seaside, right? And I say, Nathan, do you want an ice cream? And you're like, yeah, cool. So I step on the road and I'm just about to walk and you hear this, beep, and I jump out the way and I'm like, fuck it. Car brushes past me, right? That same system, that limbic distance system just saved my ass. Right? Now it didn't have time to go, ooh, is that a cup? Oh, hang on, that car might hit me if I walk out any further. I think I'll step back over the wall. It just grabs me and gets me out of there and then shoot and worry about it later kind of thing. Right? Now that system's got to do that. It has to prioritize safety over that. So that's the exact same system that then freaks out when you're supposed to be speaking in front of people and wants to try and get you out of there. Or won't let your mouth work when you're trying to talk to somebody who's really important or a girl or something or whatever. It's exactly the same system. It's the same system that triggers panic attacks. It's the same system that makes you feel anxious as hell because it wants to create some kind of resistance to stop you doing the thing.
And I guess the biggest flaw with this is it's all built on your own thoughts over many years, right? Which are often wrong.
It's not your thoughts as much as your experiences. Your thoughts are just you trying to figure this stuff out. What matters are the actual experiences. Because if you look how your body senses this stuff, right? So quick brain lesson, very simple one. So normally the information is coming through your five senses, goes up your spinal cord, into your brain, and it goes up into your hypothalamus, which then distributes it between your limbic system, which is your emotional, irrational mind, and your neocortex, which is your rational thinking mind. It distributes it between the two. You assemble that into your version of reality and everything's fine. But You've then got the amygdalas. The amygdalas sit on just behind your ears. They're about the size of an almond. And they've got a higher speed link further down that chain. They're linked with your hippocampus to look through spatial and memory. And what they're always doing is looking for, am I safe? So they're basically looking for threat. They're matching against your database of experiences that you've had to see if anything matches. The second they get a match, they fire off about 25 different functions, but the main one's the HP access, which is your fight and flight response. But before it fires that off, it takes your neocortex offline. Right? It takes your thinking mind offline completely. So now you can't think, but it's not just thinking. Your sight processing in there, your ears processing's in there, your voice processing's in there. Executive functions like reasoning and decision-making and all of that good stuff is all in there. So now you've got no rational mind. Now you just react. So that's just, but again, that's that system just doing exactly what it's meant to do. Because in the situation of the car, I didn't need to be able to think about that. I didn't need to be able to speak. I didn't need to be able to hear. I just needed every bit of energy to go into my muscles to get me out of there. Mm-hmm. So it just reroutes everything to make priority of getting you out of there, which is fine when you're getting out of the way of a car, but not so useful when someone sticks a microphone in front of your face or you're in a job interview or you're having to have an important conversation with your kid and you're triggered, or you're having an important conversation with your wife or your partner or your husband or whatever it is. And these are real life situations that come up all the time. And then we think there's something wrong. There's nothing wrong. It's just that system's got oversensitized. And now it's just trying to keep you safe. So does that make sense?
Yeah, it's wild hearing it actually, because I can only reference my own experiences, but I've really struggled the last couple of years with public speaking, and it's something I never struggled with. And we've spoken about it pre-record. But that moment where the thing you were talking about there behind your ears, what they call?
The amygdala.
When they kick in and your brain just disappears, you literally can't even read word pages. Your mind just goes completely. Yeah, yeah. And suddenly you think, shit, I'm in trouble here. And that's fine, isn't it?
Oh, totally. Or somebody starts talking to you and you can see the mouth moving and hear the noise, but you can't
process.
You're not processing. You forget that everything's a process.
Yeah.
When we see things, we're processing it. When you hear things, we're processing it. When you speak, it's processing. Everything's processing. So when it doesn't process, you've got a massive chunk of you taken away, which freaks you out. But again, I just highlight, the brain is doing exactly what it should do. There's nothing wrong with it. You're not ill. You haven't got a disease. There isn't a problem with your brain chemistry. All these things that we are told mental health is, in the vast, I'm not saying every single person, because some people have got brain injuries or something wrong, but the vast majority of people, like between us, we've probably worked with about 1,500 people between me and Tracy, and the vast majority, probably a handful of people we couldn't help. And that was usually because they didn't want to, because they wouldn't go there. But for everybody that would go there, they can't believe it, because you take the splinters out, which I'll explain in a minute. You take the trauma out and the mind just returns to normal and this stuff disappears. Because remember, I said it was oversensitized.
Let's talk about the splinter analogy, because this is what got my attention when we first started talking, and actually really the analogy for this. Can we talk about that quickly?
Yeah, sure. So that's where I want to go, because I keep saying it's oversensitized. So what does that mean? Yeah. It's all right saying it's oversensitized. So this explains exactly what oversensitization is. I was working on a retreat in Cyprus, and I was going to work with a local guy, and I knew his English wasn't his first language, and I wanted to simplify it to make it so he understood. So I was trying to think of a way, and I came up with this, which is the splinter. If you think of a wooden splinter, big piece of wood comes along, hits us, small piece of it breaks off and goes in. And now that actually creates a wound. Now that's sore and it hurts. And one thing us humans don't like is pain. And in fact, we're deeply conditioned to stay away from it, which is a good thing. So we now move away from it and we keep other people away from it and we protect it because it hurts and we don't want anyone to touch it. Then after a while though, it'll heal over. Now we can touch it, and it's all right. But if someone comes and grabs you on it, you still jump because the wound's still there and the splinter's in there and it's still sore, right? So then we get an emotion. An emotion, big emotion comes on and hits us. We're all right at dealing with so much of that. But then when it gets to more than we deal with and we feel overwhelmed, this is what trauma is. Well, trauma is actually body's response to that extra energy. And just for a fun fact, trauma is Greek, or the Greek word for trauma, as the Greek word for wound is trauma. So it just means wound. It literally means wound, right? So we take that in and shove that splinter inside of us. So now we've got this emotional splinter in there and it hurts and it causes that wound. So now we keep away from it and we keep other people away from it because it's painful. We don't want them to go near it. But the thing is, this never really heals either. We might think it's okay, but then someone comes and presses us on it. And when I press on it, something looks like it, sounds like it, smells like it, tastes like it, reminds you of it in some way. So it could be the smell of someone's perfume or a line from a sort of song or something somebody says, or the way they say it, or the angle they look at you, or just something, some human experience that reminds you of that other experience. And that presses that wound, right? And it triggers the feeling you had at the time. But the trouble is, the unconscious mind has no sense of time and space. It only knows now. So you now experience now and think it's now. So your nervous system now thinks you're in trouble and danger. So it triggers that amygdala hijack off, that amygdala problem, and then you're into that remote emotional roller coaster. You know, so this is what causes all the problems. This is why we say things we don't mean, do things we don't mean. When you're having a good day and all of a sudden you go into a bad mood and you don't even know why, or you're in a meeting and all of a sudden you get the fear and can't speak or whatever it is. That's where it comes from, because something in that experience triggered you. When some of these are obvious, road rage is usually an obvious one. If someone pulls over, cuts you off in traffic or something, it's obviously that did it. But what are not obvious are ones like you might have had a fight with your girlfriend once and then a lady walks into a meeting with the same perfume on and you suddenly find yourself weird mood or aggressive or arguing, or because that's triggered that old feeling. And now you've got that feeling and you don't know why it's there, but your unconscious mind goes, you feel like this, and responds appropriately with the nervous system.
Wow.
So each one of those splinters. So imagine you've got, I had one around standing up in front of people and being laughed at. I had one around not being believed by my own family. I had one around being chased and attacked. As well as, we have hundreds of these things. It's every time you get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So you imagine now you're tiptoeing through the middle of all this, trying not to trigger anything, and then wonder why we have this pandemic of imposter syndrome. How can you be yourself in the middle of trying not to touch any of that?
That's the problem, isn't it, with really broad generic advice. And we speak about this a lot on the podcast. You go onto Instagram and you post being like, hey, just be yourself. Hey, you might be here, blah, blah, blah. And you read it and just go, there's no, you can't just ditch 30, 20 years of activity off the back of a post. I think this is why people find it so hard to commit to new things, right? Because the emotions that they already have and the feelings they already have are blocking them from moving on. It's to do with being a lazy bugger or being unmotivated. So I massively disbelieve in the notion that motivation matters. Like, motivation is just total bullshit. It comes and goes, never sustainable.
Transformation, not motivation. When you transform things, and I don't use that word lightly because it gets overused in the self-development industry, but that weekend was a transformation of me. That was like a 180-degree turn. I went there, I told you when we spoke yesterday, I went there in London on the tube. Terrified. My senses were just overwhelmed. To hell, I just had to put my head down and just get through it. When I left the course, I was sat there, my arms like on the chair, chatting to everybody and freaking Londoners out because they're not on the same
journey.
In fact, no, it were busier.
Yeah.
It were busy because I went there on a Friday lunchtime, which weren't too busy, and we left on Monday morning, and it were 15 deep on the platform to get on the train. And I was just like chatting away and really excited. Everything looked more colourful. Music sounded better. Everything, all my senses came alive, because when you're feeling like I used to feel, if you've got any level of trauma, you numb yourself out because you don't want to feel it. But you can't selectively numb out. You can't numb the bad stuff out and let the good stuff in. You just numb out.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden, I felt unleashed. Everything was just bright and shiny and sparkly and nice. That sounds really weird.
You have some off days. Like there's days where you...
Of course.
But in the main, do you still feel that way?
No, you normalize. Us humans are very good at normalizing. And we have to be, because you have to be able to deal with whatever on your plate. Otherwise, you'd be up, down, up, down, up, down. So it's a kind of damping effect. But I'm happy every day. I wake up happy. And if I'm not, it takes me 10 seconds to make it happy. I don't have to go far before I'm happy. Whereas, without exaggerating, every day from about 7 to 18, when I woke up, if there were a button that I could have pressed that would have exited me without upsetting anybody in my family, I'd have pressed it all day.
There is. You're that close.
Oh, man. The amount of times I did stupid shit on my bike when I was a kid, like biking down the wrong side of the road against oncoming lorries and seeing out who would play chicken, see who would be first.
But in your mind, you think if it happened.
Oh, yeah. I never did it.
Of course, but yeah.
But I'd go biking down the other side of the road and I'd bottle it way before the truck came. But in my head, I was like, if only. Because it were painful. It were fucking painful. Every day were painful. And I couldn't tell anybody and nobody understood. And unless you've been through it, it's hard to understand. Because emotional pain is, and it's been studied now, emotional pain registers exactly the same as physical pain in your brain. It's horrible. It's horrible. And if you're inside of that, and I used to wake up and dread the day. Dread was my main feeling. Right. So to now, I wake up happy every day. Man, I'm golden. I'm like, I couldn't be more grateful. And like I said, it's not perfect. God, compared.
Better than it was, right?
That's why on my bio it says from living hell to hell, heaven on earth, because compared it is.
Yeah, it's.
That's why I love to share this message, because I want people to know it's possible.
Someone said the other day, actually, a view from heaven's best from hell, right? Where you're looking up and you're in the dumps and you feel like there's a way, but you're stuck in the bad times. And there generally is always a way, isn't there? And again,
I knew, even though I was told I had to learn how to cope, there's something in me that...
Yeah, it's not like...
And that was physically and mentally and emotionally, because physically I was told I would never get my energy back and back. And mentally I was told I would have depression for the rest of my life and I should be on antidepressants and blah, 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 blah. And no, I took them for a week and then I chucked them away because I didn't like the way it made me feel.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, I've got to figure this. And I've got one of them minds. So that's why I'm a good software engineer. I need to fix problems. I love fixing. Give me a problem to solve. I love it.
You fix it.
And this was like the best puzzle ever.
Yeah.
No, I nearly gave up. I'm not saying it was a linear journey on the last 20 years. It was up and down and it had some real lows as well. And I nearly gave up a few times and it was frustrating as hell. But now I'm a shortcut for that.
Yeah.
Because I know that path really quick. So it doesn't have to take forever. I've worked with people who've had horrific trauma, like seeing things that you just sit there and I try not to react. It's not my place to give that kind of feedback. I just don't give any feedback. But sometimes I'm like, oh, bless you. And then two or three sessions, they're walking out laughing about it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have to take long, because one of the things we talk about in our work is using the right tool for the job. If you've got a screw stuck in the wall and I give you a hammer, you can probably get the screw out of the wall, but it's not going to be easy and it's going to make a mess of the wall. And trying to figure trauma out with your mind is like using a hammer. Whereas if you've got a Makita power driver, getting that screw out, it's effortless, isn't it? It's just... That's what, when you've got feeling level stuff going on, when you use feeling tools, it's much quicker.
Interesting. Tim, thank you for sharing all your personal stuff as well, alongside the tips for dads to tackle this, because this has been incredibly valuable, and we're going to work together beyond this anyway, so you'll definitely be kicking around the community. Cool. And we'll get dads to connect with you as well and have some conversations. But yeah, thank you so much for sharing the personal stuff alongside the professional stuff. I know it all ties in anyway, but it's really refreshing to hear your journey and the progress and the ups and the downs and everything else. So thanks for sharing it all.
And just one little thing about that as well. One of the things that holds people back the most, and whether I'm working with somebody, the first thing I go and look for is if they got any guilt or shame. Because when we carry guilt and shame, if you think of the energy of shame, it's like you want to put your head down, you don't want to make contact, you want to hide and run away, and you don't feel like you deserve. A lot of the work I do with people's around that, because the reason I can share my journey so openly about drugs and being a waster and complete fuck up is I've got no shame around it. I've let go of all that. I used to speak about it through slightly tight lips and not want to share it because I thought people might judge me or whatever. Like, it's part of the journey. I wouldn't be here if I didn't do that. But just to show you what happens when you take guilt and shame out of things, and any level of any emotion, any beliefs, any stories you carry, any of that stuff's all connected to the way you feel.
Yeah, it's funny.
The way you feel changes the way you represent yourself, changes the way you view yourself. It's the root of everything. That's why it's on the bottom of that hierarchy, because it's foundational. When you feel good, you automatically think good. Like you were saying about motivation. Motivation is like mental masturbation. It's just you're doing it to try and make yourself feel better.
Yeah.
And it's the same. The second you take your emotional stuff out, so you feel good, you immediately think good. You don't have to do any mindset work, because your thoughts are always just trying to make sense of how you feel. So like everybody I work with will come in with a busy mind, and every single person leaves with a clear mind. Do we do any mindset? No. Yes, I do. I am a mindset coach as well, and I will do that with people, but that comes later. That comes when your foundations are clear. Once your foundations are clear, then you can build on top of that.
Interesting. Tim, thank you so much, buddy. Be back on, because I dare say there'll be a lot of dads who just resonated with, and we'll need to answer some more questions. So maybe that's the next step. We'll do some Q&A with some dads who maybe come along and have got some questions.
I love that. So yeah, please do.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Tim. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thank you. Appreciate you too.
Dads, hey, it's Nathan. If you enjoyed that episode, please hit subscribe in whichever place you get your podcast. Also, we made a bold decision, really hard to create content, repurpose content across multiple channels when it's a bloke in a man cave trying to spread a message about dadversity and what we're trying to build over here to help dads live a better life and ultimately help their kids to do better. And we made a decision to go exclusively on TikTok and use the podcast episodes as a way to allow dads to connect, hopefully, with our experts and other dads with video. And if you want to search for Dadversity on TikTok, it's at Dadversity Official. Feel free, I'd appreciate a follow, and please share the message with any other dads that you might know. We are trying to do some big things over here, and there's some really exciting developments in terms of online learning platforms and development, community, and all sorts of stuff going on in the not too distant future. I appreciate everything you're doing for Dadversity, and I really hope that the content we're delivering is giving some level of value to you or dads that you know. All right, cool. Until next time, see you later.